Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
The Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 22nd day of March 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's out of Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, Dan O'Brien from K-State will be here to take up the agricultural energies and what ethanol usage will look like for the coming year. The numbers put out by USDA and more surprisingly by the models that Dan runs is really big, so we'll find out what that really means as it relates to the price of corn. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Here's how the numbers finished up in Chicago for the day. Futures in the corn pit were a bit higher. May contract up a half at 370. December unchanged at 387 and three quarters. May beans were up 8 1/4 at 910 and a quarter. July 8 3/4 higher at 917. November at 921 and a half up 8. Wheat futures for the day at 466 and three quarters up a quarter in the May. September, rather July, at 474 and a half up 1. And July hard red at 487 and three quarters up 2 1/4. Let's jump real quickly to Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Wayne, what was the major driving force for the day in the marketplace?
Well, it was the beans, Todd. They pushed through the 200-day moving average that provided a lift and additional short covering bled into the corn for a while and into the wheat because of the weather that had been the freeze that we had and the possible freeze coming up on the weekend. But basically, the beans and the funds buying and the technical push right there.
We'll talk more with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, in just a couple of minutes here. Let's check some of the rest of the numbers and see how they traded in Chicago for the day. The live cattle futures finished the nearby contract $1.92.5 lower at $136.42.5. Feeders were down 87.5 cents at $161.50. And lean hogs for the day at $70 even were up 65 cents on the afternoon. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. We post all of our agricultural programming there not long after it airs on our radio stations.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's check some of the outside markets. Crude oil for the day now at $41.45. That's 6 cents lower. Ethanol futures are about 0.3 cents lower at $1.38.7. And the wholesale price of a gallon of gasoline at $1.50 even. That's down 4 1/10 cents. Natural gas at $1.86 1/10 is 3 3/10 cents higher for the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average in the outside markets is currently trading at 17,507. The U.S. dollar at 95.645 is up 0.341. And gold futures are trading at $1,248.10, up $3.90. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says sunny skies, 66 degrees today. It's beautiful outside, breezy, south-southwest winds at 23 to 25, gusting to 39. So it's windy out there, mostly cloudy this evening, a low of 51. Again, that south-southwest wind will be steady, 16 to 18, gusting to 29, and then tomorrow a 30% chance of rainfall. Thunderstorms after 1 in the afternoon, mostly cloudy and a high of 66 during the day. Tomorrow, a chance of showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday night, possibly a thunderstorm after 11, with a low of 47 degrees. Rainfall on Wednesday night in the area set at 80%. Showers are likely on Thursday with a thunderstorm before the noon hour, and then a chance of showers, mostly cloudy. Temperatures falling throughout the day, around 41 by the time we get to 5 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, here on Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 22nd day of March, a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson is here from L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good, thanks. Again, thank you for being with us, Wayne, today. I do appreciate you being around. Tell me again what it is that's been driving the marketplace and your expectations for the rest of the week.
Well, I think the number one mover today on the board was, of course, the beans, Todd. They broke through the 200-day moving averages overnight. They continued to trade stronger as we went on today. The palm oil has been the main driver along with that, going to a two-year high in the palm oil, the bean oil following very close behind, and that, of course, raising the value of the bean crush and taking some of the bean crushes back to a little bit of a profit here, I think about 58 cents now. So that along with a lot of fun buying has been driving the market here.
So this is a market move based off technicals, moving through the 200-day moving average for soybeans, but can it be sustained, and are there fundamentals that tell us this move higher can remain in place for soybean?
Well, I mean, it depends on how strong the funds want to be and what we're doing, but it looks to me like, in all honesty, if we look at a lot of the fundamentals out here, we look at the bean oil, we're priced about 10% higher than Argentina on our Gulf price compared to their port price. We're priced $48 a ton over Brazil on bean oil, and bean meal right now. That way. So, and we are seeing the basis levels break back on the interior anywhere from 2 to 5 cents on this run up. But we are seeing quite a few beans move in the cash market.
Is this part and parcel of the move from with crude oil higher above $40 a barrel now?
Oh, that sure doesn't hurt. I mean, the oils all have been doing a lot better. The crude oil, the dollar receding back over the past here, you know, we're up 37 ticks today, but still down just at 95.67. So, you know, the dollar receding back, the crude oil moving up, and the risk on attitude in most all of the markets here the last week has helped all of our markets. You know, the wheat, we had a little bit of scare with the freeze that we did have in the Southwest. The South Route 70 there, why we've seen some damage. We saw the Oklahoma wheat ratings drop 4% on the week. And we've got another spat of cold that's maybe going to be out there again this weekend. So we might do a little more damage, but maybe not a lot because not a lot of the wheat has joined it yet.
Given the strength in the soybeans, the strength yesterday in the wheat, the possibilities of more cold air coming there could do some more damage later in this week. Corn just remaining steady. Is there any hope that that market might move higher?
Well, you know, if generally a rising tide floats all boats, and we've got a ways to come up, but the world corn stocks and the competition from the world feed wheat right now is just keeping the corn under wraps. We've also, as we're looking ahead to next week's report, let's remember we're cutting back on bean acres and adding to the corn acres for next year. And that basically is riding a little bit hard on the situation also.
There are some pretty good sized numbers beginning to float around for acreage for both corn and soybeans.
Yeah, and as we get back, we got back above $9 here, closing at $9.20. Depending on where you're at, that can give you over a $9 fall beans or projecting on out, if you store them and like that. And that does help a lot of people say, hey, I might plant a few more acres of beans.
Does it also offer opportunities for marketing new crop?
You know, there's a lot of things that happened today. One of the main advisors say actually bought back some of the calls that he'd sold a week ago along the way. So, but it does offer some opportunities to maybe put a floor under some of this stuff, and it does make the prices of the calls that you might sell against it, put a ceiling on, a lot more advantageous than it was just a week ago.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 22nd day of March. It's a Tuesday afternoon this week. Remember, the markets are closed on Friday for Good Friday observance. Although it's not a holiday across the United States, the markets, however, are closed on that day. USDA will be open, and its Hogs and Pigs report will be released on Friday afternoon. We will not be in, although there will be a closing market report on that afternoon. I'll pre-produce it. Thursday, I'll be in Chicago at the University of Illinois Chicago Forum. They're not too far from downtown Chicago for the Good Foods Conference and Festival, my opportunity to catch up, I hope, at some point with the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. I think that'll happen Friday morning, but we'll see him on Thursday. And he might have something to say about his recent trip to Cuba, TPP, GMO labeling, a whole bunch of other things. So we'll check that out as we make our way through the week here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Next week, USDA will release the quarterly grain stocks report. Typically, it's overshadowed by the prospective plantings report released on the same day. However, it occasionally provides a surprise to the trade. For soybeans, the stocks estimate is often very near the level expected by the markets, as University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good. This is because we generally know how many soybeans are used at any point during the year based off the magnitude of the domestic crush and the exports, both of which are tallied either by the government, the industry, or the two combined. The stocks estimate, says Good, really does indicate the magnitude of seed, feed, and residual use of soybeans in the previous quarter. Unlike corn, for which feed and residual use is a large portion of disappearance, seed, feed, and residual use of soybeans is a relatively small portion of disappearance during the winter months. However, he cautions occasionally the March 1 stocks estimate provides a surprise.
Based on the average trade guess reported by news services, the March 1 stocks estimate has deviated from market expectations by more than 30 million bushels 9 times in the past 25 years and by more than 60 million bushels in 4 of those years.
The expected level of soybean stocks on March 1 of this year can be calculated. The USDA's Oilseed Crushings, Production, Consumption, and Stocks Report provides information for December of 2015 and January of 2016. The estimate for February, that'll be released April 1st. The National Oilseed Processors Association, or NOPA, estimate of the magnitude of February soybean crush by its members can be used to estimate the total February crush. For the 9 months that USDA's provided soybean crush estimates, May to January, the USDA crush estimates have exceeded the NOPA crush estimates by 6.4%. Applying that ratio to the NOPA February crush estimate suggests, Daryl Good, that 483.1 million bushels of soybeans were crushed in the second quarter of the current marketing year. It's possible then to calculate the number of soybeans exported in the last quarter, too.
Based on a combination of USDA and Census Bureau export estimates, second quarter exports totaled just over 677 million bushels.
This leaves the seed, feed, and residual usage factor. That's tougher to figure out, but a much smaller number. If this year follows the average consumption pattern, Good says it would be about 12 million bushels in the second quarter. So 483 million crushed plus 677 exported plus 12 fed, that equals 1.173 billion bushels consumed in the second quarter. Subtract that from the first quarter stocks plus the imports and you get 1.55 billion bushels of soybeans on hand March 1st in the United States. The grain stocks report March 31 shouldn't vary much from this number, but it could, says Daryl Good.
If the March 1 stocks estimate is surprisingly large or small, the accuracy of USDA's 2015 production estimate may be called into question. The USDA has revised the previous year's production estimate by varying amounts in 20 of the past 25 years based on the stocks estimate at the end of the marketing year. However, it would be premature to question the accuracy of the production estimate based on the March 1 stocks estimate due to the large variation in quarterly disappearance of seed, feed, and residual use of soybeans.
Here's why. The 8 largest revisions in the production estimates following the USDA September 1 stocks estimate range from 1.1 to 3.5%. Only 3 of those 8 large revisions followed a surprise in the March 1 stocks estimate that exceeded 30 million bushels in size. Conversely, of the 9 years in which the magnitude of the surprise in March 1 stocks estimate exceeded 30 million bushels, only 3 were followed by revisions in the production estimate that exceeded 1%. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Dan O'Brien now joins us to take a look at the agricultural marketplace as it relates to ethanol and energies. Thanks, Dan, for being with us on this Tuesday. Tell me where you are in Kansas at this point and what you're up to.
I'm in Manhattan, Kansas. We've been talking to a group, actually of students here at K-State about major drivers in agricultural markets that happened over the last decade. Of course, bio energy development here in the U.S. has been one of them.
And so what is your main topic to them and trying to get across to them as it relates to energy and the agricultural markets?
Well, I think that the leveling off of the growth of the renewable fuel standards is one of the factors that's leading to lower feed grain markets, corn in particular. Again, sure, spurred the strong growth up until about 4 or 5 years ago. And then, again, the sideways move in that has had a negative effect on at least prices and profitability and farther reaching effect on farm incomes and land banks here in Kansas.
You watch very closely a couple of things that are projections. For instance, an Iowa ethanol plant that you have that works on models. What does it tell you about the industry's health today?
Well, it stands right now, both our model and actually other ones that are being that are already talked about on various outlets are looking at losses of 10 to 15 cents per gallon at this point. I think it's a thought-provoking time, you know, as we're coming into summer driving season. And here within the last few days, we've seen RBOB prices into the high side. It has seen corn prices move up just a little bit. Plant profitability, well, and plant profitability, of course, being negative. I think there's a lot of concern about the buildup of the ethanol stocks and where the market might go. One thing, Todd, we've been working on here is to look at how much corn might be used for ethanol production here as you move off through the rest of this marketing year that we're in now, the 2015-16 marketing year for corn. These USDA numbers are about 5.225 billion bushels, I believe. And if you look at the pace of usage from the EIA numbers, the Energy Information Agency from the Department of Energy, and extend them out to the rest of this year, you get a number close to 5.6 or more by our numbers. But what must be in the USDA's accounting is that they're anticipating that the large stocks that apparently have built up in ethanol, for ethanol, are probably going to end up and be at, again, either RINs or something else will substitute in for them later on in the summer. That must be the reason, because there's sure a difference in what you project final usage of corn and actually ethanol production to be through the rest of this market and you're ending in August relative to what the USDA numbers are showing at this point in time. Just something to think on.
So just to clarify, those usage numbers, USDA's figure and the figure of the 5.6 billion, both are actually really big numbers given the historical experience of ethanol over the last several years.
Yes, the 5.2 actually I think would be a record, the 5.225. And I guess what our K-State numbers are saying is that if we continue on a trend without some adjustment for large stocks, that we could end up that number could end up even being higher by the time we get to the end of this marketing year. So when your models say one thing and another accepted and trusted source says something else, then you start to ask questions as to why. I think there's probably anticipation that corn prices will move to the higher side, profit margins for ethanol will become challenged. Of course, for that to be offset for an ethanol plant's profitability, you'd have to have the summer driving season heat up enough and cause enough demand to help hold RBOB gasoline prices and ethanol prices to the higher side. And that must be where the ground of conflict is in our ethanol markets, trying to figure out which will win out, the increased demand we anticipate seeing this summer, or that what could be a higher cost of corn as we move forward on the input side. I guess we'll see how it all works out as we move on in the next coming months.
Can you use normal seasonal patterns to give you a crystal ball as to whether this will work or not?
Well, for corn, the seasonal pattern would be for us to move higher from here off into the summer months, and be, of course, There's a seasonal average price and there's a seasonal volatility. There's potential for a fair amount of volatility. Anytime you're out in the growing season, especially this one with a lot of concerns about El Nino, the La Nina transitions, et cetera. The challenge with our seasonal patterns here in Kansas, anyway, and I think across the Sun Belt, is that we've looked at the seasonal patterns and completely defied it. To defy them this year, as we've gone through, as we've seen, prices actually moved to lows now. In February and coming off into March. So as the futures would say, as would show, along with some intended or expected basis improvement, we would see prices move to the higher side for corn. And I think it's such a moment of decision, both in my part of the country and yours, Todd, when you look at what will happen once we move past corn planting in May and start to see crop development, information as we move into June and July. You know, what direction will the corn market go? Well, then to the degree that all plays out, if corn prices move higher, then there's every possibility that and the likelihood that you're going to add some negative pressure to the profitability of ethanol plants, and then there's the possibility of some challenging conditions out in the middle of the summer. But again, we'll have to see how the corn market works out, as well as the fuel demand picture and how it will play out in the next several months. And then I think that ethanol plants, as they operate on the margin, they'll be in a responsive mode.
Dan, one other final question for you related to wheat and the freeze or cold temperatures over the weekend. I know we have 7 or 8 days before we'll really know what or if there had been any damage across Kansas. What are your expectations?
It seems that we did get some pretty cold temperatures in the southern part of the southwest part of the state and south central. We know that whatever was green and growing will have been damaged. Just question if did we have reproductive wheat plant parts expressing themselves at that point in time. Right? I think in the northern half of the state, probably not so much. There's still a pretty good possibility that we did see some damage as we went to the south. Again, not the southern half of the western part of the state, and you know, in the macro picture, are we talking about 150, 200 million bushel, 300 million bushel, something like that in terms of potential in Kansas as you move on down south from there? When you look at the U.S. wheat supply demand balance, if you take 100 to 200 million bushels off, then you start to get closer to 40% stocks to use instead of the 47, 48 that is there now. If we and the supply demand numbers could sure change, really the picture is with all the supplies that wheat around the world, will the overall market be very nervous about losing 100 to 200 million bushels of wheat if that comes into play? You probably think not right now, given the broader world supplies. But if the U.S. has a problem, Black Sea has some issues, which they do, and dryness comes into other parts of the world, well, then we could see the wheat market turn around. But you have to have a number of things fall in line to see that happen.
Dan, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again in a month.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Dan O'Brien, of course, is with K-State. He's located in Heston, Kansas today. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In a couple minutes, we'll be back. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Remember, you can always find us online at WILLAG.org. The address, again, is willag.org. I'm U of I Extensions. Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Bavarian Crepes Day. The origin of the crepe is the northwest of France, where they are traditionally served with cider. It's also United Nations World Water Day. The international observance is an initiative that grew out of the 1992 United Nations Conference on Environment and Development in Rio de Janeiro. Since then, at least 200 million people have gained access to clean water. On this day in agricultural history in 1831, William Stymington died, a British mining engineer. he developed one of the first successful steam-driven paddle wheels. The paddle used a piston rod coupled to a crankshaft by a connecting rod, a design that would become standard for steamships. The paddle, installed on the Charlotte Dundras, proved capable of towing two barges of 70 tons along a 19.5-mile stretch of river. In 1857, the first department store elevator for passengers was installed in New York City. In 1841, cornstarch was patented by Orlando Jones. Prior to that, primary sources for starch had been wheat and potatoes. By the way, corn syrup is made from cornstarch. Enzymes are added to break the starch down into sugars. And in 1960, Agnes Abner died. Abner was a British botanist who wrote Herbals, Their Origin and Evolution. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey, empowering individuals with financial education through their Resource Center. For online calculators, planning checklists, and articles, visit Busey.com. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 22nd day of March, 2016. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, let's start with the weather forecast for your part of the world and then build on that as to what it might mean in the Midwest. Kind of a rough setup coming your way.
Yeah, there is going to be a vigorous storm coming out of the east slopes of the Colorado and Wyoming Rockies tomorrow. That's going to bring a significant snow event to the east slopes of the Rockies. But boy, here comes a significant snow for Nebraska, portions of South Dakota, and portions of northwestern Kansas. And this system is going to translate eastward and will be moving into portions of Minnesota, portions of Wisconsin and Iowa, and portions of Illinois. On the back side of the storm, could be looking at some late March snows out of this and some much colder temperatures.
How cold and how much snow?
Well, snow amounts could be as high in portions of Nebraska over the next 24 hours of 6 to 12 inches, probably more in the moderate range of 3 to 8 inches across portions of Iowa, portions of Wisconsin, and northwest Illinois as it comes on through. And we'll have some nights coming up here at the end of the week. It'll be in the 20s. And boy, everything that we see here over the next week to 10 days is pretty chilly from the Rockies east. It's going to be colder than normal.
Speaking of those low temperatures, that along with the low temperatures to the southwest Kansas, Oklahoma suffered through earlier in the week, have you concerned at all about the winter wheat crop out west?
Well, you know, we certainly did get cold. It wasn't a severe cold and it didn't last too long, but there are other opportunities for colder weather coming. So those southern plains, those wheat areas are going to be under the gun for at least another 10 to 14 days of other cold surges. Now, one thing that could happen is some of these cold surges could come with some rain and then some wet snow to give some cover and protection, and that's something that may help out.
Turn your attention to South America, where they're in the midst of harvest. What do conditions look like in Brazil and Argentina?
Well, it'll be interesting. You could sort of flip things. Over the short term, here over the next few days, harvest weather in Argentina, very good. Looks like a mostly dry forecast for all the key harvesting areas of Argentina between now and early next week. Late next week, it'll reverse. While Argentina is dry and Brazil is wet in the short term, Brazil gets drier and Argentina gets wet late next week.
Can I bring you back to the United States? Forgot about one little item, the Delta region. They, earlier in the spring, were inundated with something like 20 inches of rainfall. Have they dried out? Will they be able to move, or will they get wet again?
Okay, well, it has been here recently a little drier. There is going to be some thunderstorm activity with the same low coming through the Midwest on Thursday and Friday. That will bring some showers and thunderstorms to the southeast. They're then going to hit another stretch where there won't be too much wet weather until probably early to mid-next week when some other shower and thunderstorm activity comes our way. At the same time, though, we don't see one of these slow-moving long-term rain events like they had earlier this month. So there are going to be periods of showers and thunderstorms in those southern areas, but at the same time, some gaps in between that should allow some drying.
Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Don't forget, you may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.